You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit. Every month they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. MeUndies are the best. I don't want to get too personal here, but I'm just telling you, they're the best. MeUndies uses Lensing Micromodal in their underwear. It's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. The results have been downright dreamy. MeUndies adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. 100% satisfaction guarantee. MeUndies guarantees you will love their undies or your money back, and you will. You'll love them. MeUndies has an exclusive offer for listeners to this fine show for any first-time purchasers. When you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping. MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they offer 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund, but you won't need that. This is a no-brainer, people. Get 20% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. And to get your 20% off your first pair, plus free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB. Kershaw and Jansen, what should go first on our list here today?
The first thing that should go on the list is that a taco is not a sandwich.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
All right, time for Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday, April 5th, 2018. I don't see any snow outside, but it is quite a bit chilly, Tristan. I'm not enjoying that too much.
No snow yet.
Yeah, I think it's coming in like 24 hours. But thank you, Mother Nature. I really appreciate that, all these postponed games. Joining us on today's show, other than me and Tristan, top researcher, top pal, Kyle Soppy. We've got editorial watchdog and apparently elite sandwich maker, Leo Howell. And underrated producer, Anthony Calatayud. Gentlemen, injuries, cold weather, Otani, Kershaw and Jansen. What should go first on our list here today?
The first thing that should go on the list is that a taco is not a sandwich.
And with that, we go to the buzz. A taco is obviously a sandwich. Leo,
no,
tell him.
It's not.
Absolutely a sandwich.
Of course it's
editorial
a sandwich.
Watchdog ruling on this matter, you know, 100%.
No.
I wish I had met Earl of Sandwich. There is an Earl of Sandwich, right? He invented the sandwich.
He's in the commercial now that's out right now, isn't he?
There actually is an actual restaurant called Earl of Sandwich, and it's fantastic. There's one actually in downtown Disney. That's where I found it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a option at a fine Disney property.
It is. It's at the other end where the theater's at one end and the Earl of Sandwich is at the other. I implore you to try it, Tristan.
I thought you were going to try the Dino restaurant. That's where my kids are.
I did try that too. It was good. Chicken nuggets in the shape of a dinosaur, burgers in the shape of a dinosaur, milkshakes, you name it. All right, let's get to some actual stuff here. All right, I mentioned the Dodgers. Let's start with that. Because I don't want to be like everybody else and start with that the two-way player. All right, Kershaw, Jansen, any concerns with either one of them? Kershaw is 0-2 so far, though. I don't care. The numbers otherwise are fantastic. Jansen, though, that's not good. Down velocity. I wrote about it the other day. You probably didn't read it, Tristan, but I want to get your figures, your thoughts anyway on Kenley Jansen.
Not worried about Kershaw. Let's put that aside.
I agree.
It's ridiculous to sweat that. I mean, if we're going to critique anything, his FIP is a little higher and his K rate's a little lower. But beyond that, he's been fine. Jansen, I did give it the glance. I admit I didn't probably skip a couple of words here or there. But I'm a little concerned just because it's tied to the performance that he said that there's a mechanical flaw. And I'm not sure I fully believe him. I do worry a little bit about whether he's fully at full strength. I think there's enough reason here to doubt. I don't think anybody in fantasy can really do anything about it other than sit back and be patient. But as you said, Eric, the velocity is down. It's definitively down. It was 90.3 miles per hour in the first two outings that he pitched this season. Granted, it was up a little bit in the second one compared to the first, but he usually averages around 93 with that cutter the previous four seasons. So there's something up here, and I'm keeping my eye on it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like, I'm not a Jansen owner anywhere. I wouldn't be because I would never draft a closer that early. Even though I could say he's worth it, but yeah, I mean, this is kind of discouraging. And I think, you know, something I'm going to be looking at next spring is whoever the pitchers are who pitch on November 1st. You know, Game 6, Game 7 of the World Series, and their arms get used in a different way. I mean, we saw it the previous year with Aroldis Chapman. He did not have a good 2017. I think that might have been because he had less of an offseason. Do you buy into that at all? Is that something we should be watching? I mean, Jansen pitched in the very last game of the season, and he pitched a lot in the playoffs. I think I remember with Cole Hamels a long time ago. I mean, I'm sure I can come up with a list of players here that we could be concerned about, and mostly pitchers.
I think it's more narrative than anything, but I think that it's also not something to completely discard. This was the Brandon Morrow concern I shared coming into this season, that he was heavily used, not only during the second half, but in the World Series. I mean, the guy begged himself into a game on the third straight day, which I thought was just nuts, and he didn't pitch effectively at all. So maybe there's a little something there. This also ties a little bit into the years where we have the WBC, where these guys are working at maximum output earlier in spring training. So maybe something involved. I don't think in Jansen's case it's something I'm going to panic about. The other thing, too, is I was a Jansen believer this year, and I did take two shares of him in my leagues. And I don't think that the lesson here is don't pay for saves. I really don't think that that's the lesson to take from this Kenley Jansen thing. In a week from now, he could be fine. Granted, it's not the same as that John Smoltz outing we talked about several years ago where he gave up, what, five or six runs in the first outing and then was great thereafter. There's velocity concerns here, but I'm not panicking. I'm not.
The lesson here, frankly, is that nobody's safe. And I know that sounds pessimistic and negative, but the truth is you say, well, this guy's different. This guy never misses a game, whether it's Jansen or Votto. And we used to say it about Kershaw and Bumgarner. There's nobody safe. Everybody gets hurt at some point. That's the lesson.
Well, not everybody.
You name a player who
who's never gotten hurt?
I've been back and forth on Twitter about Bryce Harper all week. I mean, give me a break, guys. I mean,
I know a guy who's never been on the DL. Somebody we're going to discuss on this show.
Well, because he's been in baseball for 1 week.
I know. Some guys do a little bit better in the injury front than this. But you're right. It's anything goes in baseball, especially early in the year.
Let's morph this into a brief closer carousel, please.
The closer carousel.
Any jobs changed in the first week? I mean, like really changed. I mean, the Angels might have, but we don't know for sure. Orioles might have. But Arizona, we knew. San Francisco, we found out before opening day, was Hunter Strickland. I don't see any other roles that have actually changed. The Astros last night, I love this. Love what Houston did. They could have brought in Ken Giles for the ninth with a big lead. Instead, Brad Peacock just finished it off. He was already going to be unavailable for 2 or 3 days because he had pitched long. Why not let Brad Peacock finish it? I think that's fantastic to do that. And I think we might see that with some other teams. Like Seth Lugo, if he's still in the bullpen and they have a 3-run lead, why not let Seth Lugo pitch a third inning if he looks as good as he did the other day? I mean,
You were listening to that game, weren't you? I heard that same point being made that if you bring in enough relievers here, eventually you're going to find that one of them might not be at their tip-top shape there. So why not go with the guy who's given you two great innings, finish out the game with him? I agree with you. I like that strategy.
I haven't watched a Phillies game on my television since Saturday. I had a stream on Facebook yesterday, and then the day before that, well, whatever. But who's the next closer that we would say with, you know, air quotes, to lose his job?
Next closer to lose his job.
I mean, I guess I have to include Blake Parker as the Angels closer. I think it's him. But, I mean, I don't know who's replacing him. Jim Johnson pitched the sixth yesterday. Middleton was, I think, the seventh. Might have been the eighth. I mean, we could say Kenley Jansen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't look like Joaquin Soria is losing his job anytime soon. He's clearly their guy. Brad Brock, I think maybe, but to who? Givens got pounded the other day.
Right.
Arizona's safe. San Francisco's safe. Greg Holland will be the closer on Monday as soon as he gets activated, right?
Yes, that's right.
Especially after that Dominic Leone outing, which was terrible.
So that doesn't really count either.
No,
I don't know that there's any imminent danger situations. The one that you know, started on the way towards that was Fernando Rodney and the Twins, but he was fine in the second outing, so I wouldn't...
He's not losing his job. I don't think
he could at some
point,
but not now.
He could, but I don't think he's going to.
Morrow could be in that group, but I mean, it's one outing from him, and it's not really much of a sample. I don't think there's anybody in real imminent danger.
Guess the top five in the player radar. I know it's only a week, but can you guess any of them?
Well, I know who number one is. Number one's Tim Anderson.
Yeah.
I know four is the guy we're going to talk about in a bit.
Yeah, we can say his name. He hasn't done anything.
Carlos Correa is, I believe, two or three, and Bryce Harper is the other.
Yeah, okay. Fifth is the guy I wrote about today. I wrote about the Twins middle infield. So Anderson, because one of them obviously was a third-round pick, and the other is available in 92% of leagues, but he looks really good. Tim Anderson. Now, he had – we'll get to the combo meals in a minute, but he has 3 homers and 3 steals. He's batting 300. He could drop like 70 points off that. But if he ends up with a 25-25 guy, he's really underrated, and I think he's the most added player in ESPN leagues. Tim Anderson looks kind of legit, or is it just a good start?
I think it's just a good start. As a matter of fact, this is the cash in instantly if it was me. I'm with you that if he's 25-25, if he keeps up that pace, then by all means, he's absolutely going to be relevant in every league here. The big concerns I've had with Tim Anderson have not changed at all during this first week, and that is that he's one of the most free-swinging players in all of baseball, and it's really not even all that close. Chase rate is right there with last year, about 40%, which is scary high. Swinging strike rate is right there with last year. Scary high, 17%. And not only that, he hit 2 home runs off lefties. So, Eric, I'll point this out. He's had an extreme volume of left-handed matchups against left-handed pitchers, and he crushes lefties historically.
Yeah, he's off to a very good start. I mean, we're talking about some hitters here who are off to good starts. I mean, he's on that list because he can be added in a lot of leagues.
Sure.
Kevin Pillar can be added. I don't understand why Toronto doesn't bat Pillar first and move Devin Travis, who's batting like 020, down to like 8 or 9. I don't know what it would take for that to happen. But, I mean, I've been a fan of Pillar's for a while. Christian Villanueva versus Matt Davidson. They're the two players right now with 3 homer games, and we're getting more than one a week. Who would you rather have this season on a roster, Villanueva or Davidson?
I'd rather have Davidson just because there's two reasons here. One is I think the playing time is still a little more secure for him. The other is that I think that his swing is a little bit more crafted towards hitting for power, and he does have the ballpark advantage. Not to criticize Petco, you can hit homers there now, and he has the power to do it, but it's a better situation in Chicago, and Davidson's swing is a little bit more uppercut.
All right, 5 of us are listening right now. Raise your hand if you heard of Christian Villanueva a week ago. All right, Tristan, your hand is raised. Anthony, yours is not. Leo, is that a maybe? Kyle? Leo and Kyle, have you heard of Christian Villanueva before he had the 3-homer game?
Nope.
Charlie Villanueva was the closest thing I've ever heard of.
You know what I first thought?
Carlos!
Hector.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hector Villanueva.
Hector was the Cubs, the big catcher who couldn't run.
Oh, that was
that
power. Guy was fun. Yeah, he was.
I don't know. Villanueva, look, it's one game. If it was 2 homers, we'd be looking at it differently. They could play him every day there.
All right,
a
follow-up.
He could hit for average. He could be Jesus Aguilar.
He could. Here's a follow-up to you. In 2 weeks, will anybody have heard of Carlos Villanueva or of Christian Villanueva? Raise your hand.
I mean, I think Matt Davidson, when he's hitting 210 at the end of the month, is probably going to be waived in most leagues, too.
Will they both be waived?
It was interesting. Will they both be? Yeah. I mean, well, Villanueva is still obviously available in most of every league. And I can't make a great case to add really either of them in a 10-team league because batting average matters and Davidson ain't going to provide it. And with Villanueva, I mean, 20 homers, that's not even worth getting as your utility guy anymore. Let's figure out the rest of the combo meals for the week.
Hey, it's a combo meal!
All right, so before our last show, and I just missed this on Monday, a couple of Pirates did it, two of their outfielders, Polanco and Marte. You know, no questions there. I mean, except for will Marte continue to hit for power? Could he hit 20 homers? Will Polanco continue to run? Could he steal 12 to 15 bases? What are your thoughts on that?
I want to believe in Polanco. I feel like he's given us enough of a track record to have concerns, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
Monday, Hanley Ramirez did it. Now that's kind of interesting because I looked back at his games and he had actually been on first base with a chance to run 4 times and he had done it twice. If Hanley Ramirez feels like running, this could be like his 2016 season if he's healthy, where he had 30 home runs. He didn't run a lot, but I don't want to just say he can't be an effective and relevant fantasy option. Give me the final numbers for Hanley.
I'd say he finishes at about 270, maybe a little higher than that. I think he'll hit 20-25 home runs. I think he's going to get a decent amount of playing time, not an every single day kind of thing. Well, I mean, but will he steal 10 bases? That would be my question. I think if he gets there, that's going to be where he stops.
I mean, stealing bases is not about speed. It's about wanting to run. Remember the Lance Berkman year where he had 18 and he never otherwise had 10. He was like 32 when he did that. I always go back to that year because there's no reason for Lance Berkman to steal more than 3 bases in a year. He had 18.
Yeah. But people are going to call you crazy there because of the Molinas. But remember, they did every once in a while steal a base for you.
Oh, yeah.
I stole a base once. Hey, that tells you all you need to know.
Tuesday, Tommy Pham and Tim Anderson did it. Tommy Pham, I was a little bit concerned maybe 2 weeks ago about the situation with his eyes. He has a degenerative condition in his eyes, can't see, needs really expensive contacts, couldn't afford them as a minor leaguer, which is unbelievable on another show altogether, a joke. But now he can, and he looks great at the plate. He's our number two hitter, and look for some quotes that he had in something I read or on Twitter today. But Tommy Pham is a top 10 outfielder, right, if he keeps doing what he did last year and gets more playing time.
10?
I mean, that's a 25-25 guy if he wants to be.
It's bold. I feel like he'd have to get to 25 steals in order to get into that top 10. But I like where you're going. I actually didn't change him in the ranks at all, and I'm going to leave him right where he was in the preseason.
Briefly, some DL guys. Jake Lamb went on with the shoulder. Nelson Cruz with the ankle. Ian Kinsler. Are you worried long-term about any of these guys?
Not so much. The Lamb injury, they did say he's likely to come back at the end of the eligibility period. In Cruz's case, the only thing that really bothers me is just the age and the preseason issues that kind of lingered for a couple of days, but I don't think it really shaves enough off the projection. I mean, he's still likely to give you 140-plus games.
Yeah, I think he could still hit 40 home runs. Will Myers went on last night to DL. Franchi Cordero, interested?
He kind of falls on the same bin as the Villanueva and Davidson, where I think it's going to be a lot of risk for batting average. You're going for power there. I don't think he's on the radar yet.
All right, moving to pitching, Shohei Ohtani. First outing, we talked about Monday, but then he hit homers in back-to-back games, and the one on Wednesday was against Corey Kluber. So are you adjusting your preseason projections for Ohtani at the plate? Because I had the under on 10 home runs. I had the under on 200 plate appearances. I don't want to change that. I mean, it's nice that he had two home runs, and we know he's got power. I assume pitchers will attack him differently after seeing the first week. And also, the first time there's anything wrong with him, they won't stop him pitching. They'll stop him hitting. I don't think anything's changed for me. Has anything changed for you?
Not a whole lot, but this does kind of support the idea that we didn't completely tank him in the rankings from the bad spring training. We just pulled him back a little bit from that top 100 initial status. I also don't want to get too far ahead of myself on two home runs here. I mean, first of all, one of them was a wall scraper. The other one did not clear by an awful lot. By the way, his launch angle right now is in the negatives. So he's still hitting a lot of ground balls. He hasn't walked yet. And the other thing that I found that was interesting about his hitting numbers is that pitchers are attacking him as aggressively as they would number 8 and 9 hitters in the lineup, the weak types. So they were giving him pitches in the strike zone, which were quality ones there. So I wonder whether they're going to spring back. The plus for Ohtani is if you watched any of these games against Cleveland, I watched each of his at-bats in here, he's changed that leg kick where he's trying to switch up his timing a little bit. He's not doing that big leg kick. He's doing kind of like this toe tap, and maybe that's helping him a little bit.
All right, let's go briefly here on some other pitchers, yes or yay or nay. Jake Junis of the Royals, he had a good spring. And by the way, the spring numbers don't matter. That's not why I ranked Ohtani the way I did. It's because of playing time concerns. Jake Junis, should he be rostered in a 10-team ESPN league?
I'll go yay-ish there. I think he's bordering on streamer.
He's not a big strikeout guy.
Yeah, and that's why I would say he's bored. I like him, but I kind of like him in that Marco Estrada way we have over the past 2 to 3 years.
All right, I'll kind of give you that. Mike Clevinger, first outing against the Angels, very good. He is a strikeout guy. I mean, I said to you back in March when you made that prediction about three Indians pitchers with 200 strikeouts, why not four? Why can't Clevinger?
Right.
I don't know. See, I think every outing though is going to be like 5 and 2/3 for Clevinger. That's my concern with getting to 200. But 170 strikeouts and 170 innings, I think Clevinger could do that.
I'll buy those numbers, yeah. My main concern with him has always been the ERA, just susceptible occasionally to the home runs, the walks. Probably going to have a couple bad outings here. But I think, yeah, I think he's mixed league relevant. I think it's on the back end.
Do you keep Jack Flaherty on a roster, even though the Cardinals demoted him for Adam Wainwright, which is just...
He wasn't happy about that either.
He shouldn't be happy. It's not a smart move. I mean, it's not even close to a smart move. I mean, Flaherty's better than Wainwright. If Wainwright pitches poorly the next 3 weeks and they lose the wildcard spot by one game, this is why.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you keep Flaherty on a roster, on your bench, because you think he could be back up in 2 weeks?
In our game, the 10-team three bench, I just can't do it. But the problem is that I'll tell you, he's going to be an instant scoop up the minute we know he's coming back. And I hate being reactionary like that. So if you feel you can do it because you've got the open spot, I'd burn the open spot and keep him around. But I can't. Look, he's probably going to be down 3-4 weeks. I mean, we're waiting for a Wainwright injury.
Which another. I don't want to say I'm waiting for that, but because there's other guys in that rotation who are not safe either. I mean, Miles Mikolas had one good outing, and he homered. I mean, Waka, who knows with Michael Waka.
Did you see the Mikolas outing?
No.
So his breaking pitches are pretty nice there, but the rest of it is kind of a work in progress. I wonder whether that's going to be the path to Flaherty getting in the rotation next.
Potential adds pitching on Tuesday, and they might have already started by the time you're listening to this. Kyle Gibson of Minnesota, who had no control in his first outing, but otherwise was pretty good. He's facing Seattle and James Paxton, whose first outing was bad. So people are going to punt Paxton by the end of April if he has a bad April, but that's a mistake. I don't understand how you could, like, get ready for your drafts, and you're like, oh, I really like this guy. I'm going to take him in round 12, James Paxton, and then you start dropping him after one outing. Why do you do that?
I know. It's way too reactionary. I mean, he's not in the streamer class. I mean, Paxton is the exact guy you should be getting in order to slot in around his likely DL stints. By the way, Gibson, that was such a Trevor Bauer outing, wasn't it?
Strikeouts and walks.
Right. Tough to hit, can't find the plate.
Something like that.
Early Trevor Bauer.
Night. And again, why is not everybody playing on Friday night? I hate these days off on Fridays. Everybody should be playing every Friday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday.
Well, it's the weather and the opening days, the home openers and the like. It's nothing.
So
like that.
Danny Duffy's at Cleveland. If Danny Duffy pitches poorly, A, it's either a DL stint. I mean, clearly he's not 100%, but fantasy managers are going to give up. They should. Who do you feel better about, Paxton or Duffy?
Paxton.
Really? Yeah, I kind of agree.
Duffy is another guy who I think he's better than some of these names we mentioned before. I think in terms of the raw talent, he's ahead of Clevinger. But I worry about, as you said, is there an injury going on here? Is he going to miss some time? I could teeter between him being one of the frontline fantasy starters and being marginal in mixed leagues.
Future Cy Young winner Lance McCullers Jr. pitches on Friday, right, Leo? You know it, Dave.
Absolutely.
All right. Trade for McCullers. All right, Leo, come on. Like, this is like like Kyle with Tyler Chatwood, Team Tyler. And by the way, that was six walks, too, which we'll get to in a second.
We all have our pitchers. I want to know who Eric's
Who's yours?
Mine's Jack Flaherty.
Oh, I got to think about mine. Last year was Faria.
Your guy out of nowhere. I get it. The McCullers love here. I know he's a prominent
look at
name.
A list.
Leo loves him.
Which member of the Phillies bullpen is your favorite, Eric?
Oh, none. Oh. Well, they're all. I was disappointed that the other Hobie Milner didn't pitch yesterday. I was hoping for all 162.
His favorite one is empty mound guy because he hasn't warmed up yet.
Over under on Lance McCullers starts 26 and a half.
That's aggressive.
That's why I did. Well, that's I why. That's,
I think it's
going
to be.
I feel like
I'm
I have
sorry,
to.
Leo. It's going to be under. I love McCullers. I want him to get there. It's under.
Right. No, and it's kind of what we discussed in the preseason is that even if he doesn't give you that, like, pitching isn't that safe these days where that's a huge far cry off of what you'd expect from a lot of guys that you drafted around him. He was drafted near David Price. You'd probably say the same for David Price, right?
Sure. 25 yeah. starts and elite numbers like McCullers or Paxton or Price, you're going to enjoy it.
I mean, 25 starts now is what 30 used to be. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, there's a bunch of pitchers that I'm looking at and saying, I really like him. I want to see what he can do. Faria's probably on that list. Aaron Sanchez, who was better last night, is on that list. Zach Golly's really good.
Yes.
You want someone who's really late. I mean, Tyler Mahle, Fulton Nevich, who I'm still not 100% on.
Fulton's been okay, though. A good spring and yeah, encouraging
Scherzer,
start
I mean,
to the year.
Encouraging. Anyhow. All right, so Matt Harvey is on Sunday Night Baseball. Is that right? I want to make sure I got this right because I'm so disoriented
I'll
by
this. I'll open
up
my
Friday.
Grid and I'll confirm for
yes,
you.
Yes, Matt Harvey and Tanner Roark. Tristan hates Roark. I don't know why. Can we make
what
a case?
You don't know why. You know why.
Yeah, and you're wrong.
Oh, I'm right.
I mean,
I'm definitely right. He's a 4 ERA guy.
Except for the fact that in two of the past 4 years, he's had a 2.85 ERA with 15 wins, which you totally say is luck.
One could not have been anything more than a fluke, and the other two were just bleh.
Come on.
You really let's put somebody head to head. You versus me, Tanner Roark versus let's get a guy here who's on
Matt Harvey.
Team. No way. Not even close.
I mean, Roark is on one of the best teams in baseball. He had a fine strikeout rate last year. So, I mean, I know we don't pursue wins, but he's going to win games. And his ERA should be in the 350 range. And you every year you say he's
bad. He had
bad.
A fine K rate last year?
He had a fine K number last year because he's durable, which I think is important.
The durability is absolutely important, and that's what I like about him. I also like the fact that in that division, I think there's a greater chance at more usable matchups, but I think he is clearly a matchups guy.
All right.
That's my issue with him.
What's your take on Matt Harvey then? First outing was 5 innings, nothing, 1 hit, 5 Ks.
I actually think what we saw the other day is the wise move for the Mets to treat him with kid gloves and take him out before he gets the third time through the lineup, and he's going to give you decent numbers if that's the case, but it's 150 innings.
Today's Hash Browns are brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. Fully guaranteed, there's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Tristan and I have used SeatGeek in the past. It is tremendous, gets us good seats, it's easy to use on the app. Go for it. Easiest way to shop for tickets. And it's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. Saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, it grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase on SeatGeek is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
I got some guys for you. I got three candidates.
All right, what is this? Rourke versus them?
Rourke versus these guys. Let's see whether you take head-to-head with me with any of these three guys.
All right.
John Gray.
God. You and everybody loves John Gray.
I'll take John Gray over Rourke all 7 days a week.
Of course he'll have more. He won't have more strikeouts because Rourke will be healthier and he'll pitch more games.
That's why I'm throwing.
And he'll win more games. Basically, he's going to beat Gray in pretty much every category that matters. But okay.
Then that's the guy. Then we should go right there.
But no, because then it makes me seem like I don't like John Gray. But you just hate Tanner Rourke.
I'm thinking player rate or final number. I think you make a very valid point here, and Rourke's value is exactly as you said. The volume is an asset.
He's better in a roto than a head-to-head because it's about 32 starts and about, you know, a 7.5K rate.
And it might actually be the difference in the games between you and me, the head-to-head categories versus the roto. I see exactly your point.
Right, which is also part of the problem here. I mean, if AJ was on, I mean, nobody would want Rourke in a points league, or would you? You know, I mean, wins are worth something in points leagues. All right, whatever.
And who are the other two guys? John Gray versus Rourke at the end of the year. We'll see.
Yeah,
I've got to get you some bacon at Baconland.
Who are the other two pitchers we're going to name?
Julio Teheran.
Man, he's just not right. He's not the same guy he was 2 years ago. So I would take Rourke now.
Teheran is the one I find least appealing on my side here, and the third one was Taijuan Walker.
No chance.
Look, he's better than Rourke.
I don't have Rourke in my top 40 starting pitchers, but I don't have the other three guys you mentioned there either. So.
I know you don't. I'm looking at your rankings. That's how I picked them.
Which I will update at some point soon.
You have them pretty close, though.
All right. And by the way, thank you for this music, Anthony. On Monday, Gabe, you know, I guess he was just angry for having to do the show. Went back to the old music. Not the lady with emphysema, but the, you know, the old, like, 80s Devo music or whatever it is. All right. Kyle, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. We got some questions. Always use the hashtag 06010MLB and bring in your hash browns, and we'll get them on the show. We'll get the Ohtani question out of the way for you, Eric. You know, that was the majority of the questions here. Zach wants to know, the consensus entering the season was that Ohtani would be a pitcher that could hit on occasion and you'd slot him as a DH, schedule dependent. How long or how much do you have to see until that flips and he's a hitter who occasionally pitches in your lineup?
Look, I think his upside for fantasy purposes is clearly as a pitcher. He can be a top 20 starting pitcher if he makes 28 starts, keeps his ERA in the low threes, strikeout per inning. I think Ohtani can do that. The problem I have, and none of this has changed in the past 2 weeks, and it had nothing to do with the spring numbers, I don't know if he gets pushed past 150 innings. He's still young. He barely played any baseball last year. So I think as soon as he has a problem on the mound, it'll affect the way he's deployed at the plate. But, I mean, you know, the other thing is, Tristan, like, say he has a little shoulder issue and they can't start him. They can make him the regular DH. And now that would change everything. Then he would play every day. I mean, he'd be better than Bulls. I mean, if Ohtani played every day, couldn't this be like, it's a terrible comp, but this could be Matt Joyce numbers. Matt Joyce to me is a guy who only plays against right-handed pitching, could bat 260, 270 with 20 home runs in a role every day against right-handed pitching. In fact, Ohtani could probably lead off with his speed and his plate discipline. But that's not going to happen. And nothing that's happened in the first week is going to change Socha's mind on the long term on this. What do you think?
I kind of look at Matt Joyce's career numbers, and other than the fact he has a little better contact rate than I'm expecting from Ohtani this year, I statistically like the comp, but it's a lot more playing time. I think pitching is 100% his path to... I don't even know what I'd fill that
greatness.
Sentence with.
His path to greatness is not with the hitting, it's with the pitching.
I think that the usage path by the Angels is based around him pitching, and I don't think that they're going to let him DH regularly if there's any question of injury. Eric, I'm with you 100% on that. I think that they sit him, and it affects his hitting as the secondary thing regardless. And I'm with you that I think that 150 innings might be the cap. Let's not overlook the fact that J.C. Ramirez is jumping ahead of him in the rotation in order to get him on that six-day pattern. They're going to do that a lot this year.
Hey, you're going to write about this, I think, early next week, and we'll check it out then. I'm sure we're going to be discussing this on pretty much every show, but I'm not changing my mind on what I projected. And again, it has nothing to do with the spring numbers. All right, what's next, Kyle?
All righty, Jeff's got his eye on the future a little bit here, knowing that Acuna is going to be up sooner than later. How much fab are you planning to spend on him? He's got him in or he would potentially have him in a keeper league where it only cost him his last round pick over the next two seasons, so very valuable. How much fab are you putting in? What percentage?
First of all, he shouldn't be available in the league at all. But, Tristan, you're more of a fab guy. I think a potential problem looming here, okay, as somebody dropped their mic, is Preston Tucker, the former Astros farmhand, who's 27, has a pair of three-run home runs the past 2 days against the Nationals. If Preston... Man, I can't believe you're going this way. I'm just saying, Acuna is eligible to be called up, and they get their financial and the extra year of everything. I think it's next Friday, the 13th.
I believe you're right, yeah.
Would the Braves, in their infinite wisdom, really delay the recall of this potentially, you know, five-star player because Preston Tucker is still hitting 400 and hitting a home run every other game? They shouldn't.
They shouldn't, but maybe. They might. It'd be incredibly foolish. As to the question, I'm sorry to critique it this way, but I question the format here because when I hear that he's a free agent, I wonder how shallow the keeper league is. That is he going to be a keeper for you? I mean, yeah, if he's a last round pick, I feel like I'd go to 80% of my fab. I really would. I think he's that valuable in a keeper league. But are you only allowed to keep three players at the rounds in which they were kept? That's a hard case to make. You're probably going to have three more proven prime year players that are just as good keepers, so why are you spending that much fab on them?
What if it's a league where you can't pick him up until he's on a major league roster, and that's why he's there?
Yep, and that's the wrinkle here where, yeah, there's big things at play. The other thing is it an NL-only league? Then, by all means, I'm going to at least 80% on him.
Why wouldn't you spend it all? Why wouldn't you spend every dollar to get Acuna in an NL-only league?
Yeah, if this is an example like labor, where it's 12-team NL, and it's a keeper league, and you have full access to your roster, he's a 100% guy. This is like a mid-season trade acquisition from the other league.
I mean, I saved my money in NL labor for JD Martinez, Yu Darvish coming over on July 31st. Now you get Acuna for 5.5 months.
Yep.
Like, I would spend it all.
You did that. By the way, Eric, you have one of the best examples I can think of this where I think it was Milton Bradley was the guy who got traded into the league. And I know, it's Milton Bradley, whatever. Think what you want of him. He had a couple of really good years here. But you spent on him in week one, and it made a heck of a lot of sense. You got 5.5 months of impact performance.
I don't know why you wouldn't do that with Acuna. I hope he's up next Friday. And we have two shows next week to discuss that. And maybe the Braves will change their mind. But... man, they really shouldn't. He should be their cleanup hitter. Okay, what's that?
I like it. Yeah, yep.
Given the hot start and how realistically reliable he's been over the last few years, Andrew wants to know if Freddie Freeman's now the top first baseman in fantasy baseball.
The top first baseman. I mean, I know you were a big fan and you ranked him a little bit better than I did. Are people really worried about Paul Goldschmidt?
Yep.
After a week? Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Like, the ball's flying out of Arizona, so the humidor, I don't think, has played a role yet. Goldschmidt is batting 059. He has not homered. He has not stolen a base. You would really take Freeman over Goldschmidt right now?
Nope.
Okay.
But I think they're all in the same general tier. By the way, to the humidor, I ran the numbers on the thing in six key categories, three hitting, three pitching, and the only one in which this year it's doing better than the five-year average was on the pitching side for the Diamondbacks. home runs allowed. We don't have road home road games in order to compare it, and it's a six-game sample, granted, but...
I don't even know how you can run that after six games. I mean, like...
It's the numbers are slightly more pitching-friendly for the Diamondbacks themselves and the home games comparative to that five-year span. But, again, it's a ridiculously small sample.
I'll grant you that perhaps Goldschmidt should not have been ranked top five anymore, based on the Humidor. And that the tier... If Goldschmidt was his own first-base tier and the next one was Votto, Rizzo, Freeman, Bellinger, I'll grant you that I don't think that's changed for me. Like... If you say Freeman over Rizzo and Votto, would I bat an eye? No, not really. But, I mean, Votto, with the batting average, like, Freddie Freeman's not hitting .330, I don't think, for the entire season. Votto's proven that he can do that. He has unbelievable plate discipline. So, right now, maybe I'd move Freeman ahead of Rizzo, and definitely over Bellinger and Abreu, but...
You actually had Freeman ahead of Rizzo, but you had them pretty much right next to each
and
other.
And by the way...
You and I were the same on these guys. Votto and Rizzo, yeah.
If Reese Hoskins continues to steal a base every once in a while, he's Goldschmidt. Okay, now we don't have enough evidence, and Tristan thinks he's not going to hit above 260. I think he can hit 290. But if Reese Hoskins continues to steal bases, he joins the tier. Because 12 steals out of a first baseman, it's not Goldschmidt, but he joins that tier. And I think he might continue. He's such a smart player. He stole third base yesterday or the other day. I'm just saying... Yeah, everything I've seen out of Reese Hoskins so far tells me that I was right about his projections. That's a 40-homer, 100-RBI guy, and now he might steal 12 bases, and I think he can hit 280, 285, 290. I'm on board. I have shares of him in a lot of places.
Eight is his pro-career high, but that shows that he can when he's given a chance. I like it. 20% K rate so far, that's pretty good. I like it. Interesting comp there.
Just saying, like, sure. The difference in Hoskins and Goldschmidt might be nothing. Except, you know, history and batting average.
Reliability, yeah.
Reliability. I mean, Goldschmidt should look, if somebody in your league is actually worried about Goldschmidt, go get him. Give me a break.
Goldschmidt's, even in fairness, if Hoskins does do well in terms of steals, I think Goldschmidt is likely doubling his steals output. That'd be my guess.
You don't know. You don't know what Hoskins wants to do.
Right.
What if he feels like stealing 18 like Bergman did? I don't know. Like,
I agree.
Todd Frazier once stole 20. Todd Frazier's not fast, Tristan. Todd Frazier just felt like stealing bases. That's why he did it. He wasn't.
But just to be clear, from the actionable standpoint,
yes,
the projection says that Goldschmidt is likely to double his output at the very least.
And I'll give you that. But the projection on Hoskins was wrong because all it did was look at last September when he didn't have a great September.
I think his projection was
just off. No, his projection on steals was nil. Don't worry about Goldschmidt. Why would anybody project steals for Hoskins? I didn't project
because had two last year.
In like a month. Now he's got two in a week. What's next?
Let's keep it in Atlanta. Ted wants to know if Dansby Swanson is poised for a breakout and potentially a top 10 shortstop as soon as this year. He's got three multi-hit efforts in his last four games.
As good as Swanson's been so far, he's number 13 on the player rater. And that counts. I mean, he's hitting .318. He's not batting eighth, which I like. Because batting eighth, he was taking more walks than he would have. He was never going to knock in a run. He did steal a base yesterday, or not yesterday, the day before. I just don't see him as more of it than a, like, 12-homer, 12-steal guy. And if he's not going to bat at the top of the line, he's not going to score runs. So I think it's really tough for Swanson to be a valuable fantasy asset. Let me try to compare him to somebody who is not a big... Like, he's not going to really jump out at you in any category... But I do think Swanson is an eventual 300 hitter, and I thought that going into last season. And I think it's ridiculous that everybody jumped off his bandwagon for one bad year.
How about Bogarts?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he has as much. I think Bogarts is a 25 homer guy if he wants to be. He can lift the ball if he wants to. He didn't last year; he had a hand injury. But yeah, that's not the worst comp. But Swanson has to move up in the lineup. Like if they were to ever get rid of Inciarte, the top of their lineup could be Albies, Swanson, Acuna, Freeman in some order. That's their best four. But Ciardi's a fine leadoff hitter. They shouldn't get rid of him. He's also like the best defensive center player there is.
I like the top of that lineup.
I mean, if Swanson ends up hitting .270 with 10 homers and 10 steals, he's not worth it in a 10 or 12 team league. I fear that's what he is, but he's going to continue to get better.
We could actually the 4-5-6. We could go with Acuna, Markakis, Swanson, which would be pretty solid.
Pretty good. I mean, the Braves are going to be Braves and Phillies have bright futures, and White Sox. They're the three teams to me that look like wow. Wait 2 years; those are playoff teams, not this year. Why are we assuming Swanson can't do what Bregman did? He just doesn't have anywhere near that power.
Yeah, I think Bregman's swing had a lot more natural power in it. I mean, the thing that I would write down in my notes on this one on Swanson, incremental gains so far that I've seen. He's squaring up the ball nicely. 7 line drives, the line drive rate's over 40%. That's going to regress, obviously. But I think that's a big positive for his batting average. But as you said, Eric, the homers, I don't see the homers
I would
coming.
Have liked to have been able to build a team that I cared about with players that had bad years. Okay, like just awful. You know, Bogarts would have been on it, I guess, but he didn't have a bad year. He just didn't have the year we expected.
Right.
Like, because a lot of these guys are never going to be that bad. Like, there was a reason. There was an injury. They changed their plate approach. I mean, like, Joe Panik just admitted he changed his plate approach. Now he can hit 18 home runs. Never hit more than 10.
Launch angle switch with
launch
him,
angle. That's all it is. And he's homering off lefties. Unbelievable. He had 27 of his 29 career home runs were off right-handed pitching, and then he takes Kershaw deep. And another lefty, Marco Gonzalez, who obviously is not Kershaw. I'm just saying, I would have loved to have put together a roster of guys, maybe this is a future blog at some point, of guys who just, like, Nick Pivetta, he is so close. And I'm not saying this because I'm a Phillies fan. That's a strikeout and inning guy, okay? That is a potential monster if he can just figure out how to be more efficient, how to get his off-speed stuff over the plate, avoid big innings like that. Who was we talking about earlier that's like a strikeout per inning guy? Like
That was Clevinger.
Pivetta is Clevinger, but he's a year away from being Clevinger. That's what Pivetta is.
But by the way, I've never heard of this Nick Pivetta guy. I've heard of this Nicholas Pivetta guy, but
whatever.
It's killing my databases.
All right, we have any more questions?
We have two more quick ones. Thumbs Up Fantasy wants to know what you target most when considering a streaming pitching option if you're looking at strikeouts, matchup, or other pitching metrics.
Well, I have to like the pitcher. But I mean, in general, it's matchup. I mean, obviously, strikeouts. When I'm looking at a pitcher, like, all right, let's use today as an example. Who's playing today? And if it's a really bad pitcher, it'd be hard for me to use him at all. Kyle Gibson is a guy I would absolutely stream today. And maybe by the time you're listening, he's already gotten shelled. But Seattle's lineup without Cruz, the strikeout rate, it looks better. It did look better the second half of last season. But, like, James Shields is facing Detroit. I don't care. I'm not using James Shields ever. And Detroit is probably the worst team in baseball. I don't know. What do you look at?
I'm actually a little more scared by Detroit's lineup in that matchup than I am some of the others. So, for example, the aforementioned Pivetta, available in 98% of ESPN leagues as a home game
against Miami.
It's now, does the weather hold off? At least today it looks like the weather will hold off. They'll get the game in.
There's no precipitation. I mean, it's not snowing until Saturday in mid-April. But, yes, you're right. Pivetta's facing Miami, and that's not a great lineup. I mean, it's batting Brian Anderson cleanup, and I've been all over Brian Anderson. Love him, but, like, he shouldn't be in cleanup.
And the weather contrast for Miami players coming to Philly.
And it's a lot harder to hit in 30-degree weather. I mean, I'm supposed to play softball Sunday. I hope it snowed out. There's no way I can hit in this weather. It's ridiculous. All right, so overall, do you look at matchup? Do you look at K-rate? Is there another underlying? How do you choose your streamers?
Ks are usually the metric I'm going to go to first, K-to-walk rate being next one there. But, it's usually the strength of the opponent, especially checking lineups on the day of. I will stash guys who I think are looking like intriguing plays, and then I will check the actual posted lineup at some time during the day in order to get some sort of advantage. Ballpark will occasionally come into play here. And the other one, too, is the pitcher's recent trend. I will be more apt to take the pitcher who I feel has looked good in those aforementioned K and K per walk ratio categories over his past 3 to 5 starts.
And one more question.
The question was more of an etiquette question than a strategic question. Spencer wants to know if it's a bad etiquette, bad juju, bad anything like that, to bench certain players late in a week to secure ratios, to not risk going up in ERA, WHIP, something like that.
Not at all.
Couldn't agree more.
In the rules.
I mean, that people think this is a bad thing.
I hate it, but I'm with you. It's in the rules.
No etiquette. I mean, there's etiquette things mostly in trading and things like that, but like how you do your lineup, you're trying to win your league. I don't have a problem with that.
This has come up before as to whether you leave an actual blank spot in your lineup, and I don't like it, but it is allowed per the rules. And in order to win your head-to-head matchup, you need to win your head-to-head matchup. It's
Sunday
a ratio category.
Sunday night baseball, you can still, you know, take out a pitcher, and I have Matt Harvey, and I'm winning ERA by the tiniest of margins. I absolutely bench him.
It's
absolutely
good. You're fantasy baseballing correct. Like, NFL teams don't have to play out. Like, you can take a knee. Like, that's allowed. Why not?
I do this in football.
For a whole game,
take
though?
A kicker out.
Exactly.
Of course I would take a kicker out with a one-point lead. What if he misses his first field goal?
Or a defense or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. Every Monday night I look at that. Can I bench somebody with a small lead? Of course.
And to be honest with you guys, and in terms of etiquette, I hate it, and I wish we could put it in the rules that you can't do that.
How could you possibly put that in the rules?
Because you shouldn't be allowed to go with an open spot, especially in football.
Well, I don't have a problem with it.
Editorial Watchdog has no problem with it.
And that's all that matters, because when he speaks, we listen.
I'm way, way out on this island, way far out in the Pacific or something.
I don't know why you don't even like it. You wouldn't do that to try to win.
I lost in my fantasy
basketball playoffs last week because a guy missed too many free throws in the Sunday night game. I would have won considerable turkey legs,
but you're looking at it retroactively. You're not looking at it in terms of the awkwardness of the lineup. I mean, I can't wait for the Yankees game today where nobody catches. So yesterday we just sit Austin Romine and nobody's back there. That's
of course somebody's
weird.
Back there. That's not the point.
No, it is the point. We're trying to mirror the real game.
Well, we already don't.
I was just saying, we need to add UZR first if we want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, defense matters.
I don't have any problem with that.
You know, I mean, like, there's a lot of things that do matter in real life that don't matter in fantasy, and that's part of the reason why they're very different.
I'm fine with win per your rule set. It doesn't mean I have to like the rule set, but if that's your rule set, so be it.
We're done. Well, let's go around the table here. One thing. Name a player or players or team or lineup or rotation you're watching this weekend, Tristan, and then we'll ask Leo and Kyle next. Name something you're watching this weekend. We should project ahead.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot totally.
Does anybody have an answer?
I like
well,
the,
could throw a more broad question.
I like the pitching matchup on Saturday afternoon between Yu Darvish, who struggled in his first matchup, and Zach Davies, who's a guy that I've always liked but didn't do well and has those moments. And I think that's just an intriguing matchup of two guys that obviously no one's going to drop Darvish, but Davies might be out there and Darvish might be a guy that you can go trade for if he shows promise but maybe doesn't post stats.
All right, fair enough.
Same day, different game. I want to see Jose Barrio, see if he's not for real, but if he can live up to what he did in his first start. We'll see. I mean, I don't think he's an ace, but I think he's an SP2, and we'll see if he can come through.
All right, Tristan, you had enough time, or you need more time here?
He stole my Minnesota one. I was going to go to Kyle Gibson. I want to see how if Ian Kennedy follows up the decent spring here in a game in Cleveland. That's a really tricky matchup on the bench for me, but definitely a watch. The other one, too, Chris Stratton, another guy who had a pretty decent spring. Eric, you've talked about him a lot. The K rate is up. Can he handle himself against the Dodgers?
Watch the Brewers. I fear a Christian Yelich DL stint coming today. That would give all the playing time to Domingo Santana and Ryan Braun, but maybe they use Aguilar. You know, Ryan Braun does not seem the least bit happy playing first base. Just saying. Keep an eye on the Brewers. Keep an eye on the Phillies, obviously. Does Kingery play every day? Franco looks terrible at third. I still think, and I said this weeks ago, you remember, I think Kingery is the everyday third baseman by the end of this month.
Wow. I like it. I do.
I don't see how they can continue to use Michael Franco if he doesn't have any plate discipline at all. It's not like he's Brooks Robinson over there. He just and it's only a week of games and yeah keep blaming the manager. None of them are hitting, but yeah, it's his fault.
Here's a question for you: how many games do they get in this weekend? I was going to go to weather, but weather's not really watching
well,
the games.
They're
going to
play today.
For...
I mean, this is ridiculous. Why are the Phillies and Marlins off on Friday? Because they're Saturday
because
not playing.
Because if today was threatened by weather, they have the fallback of tomorrow. This is the same thing with the Yankees.
It's dumb.
And by the way, that Yankee game was awful. It was cold.
Yes.
It was misty. I was not enjoying that.
And you know
that.
What? It's not fair to just have the Yankees and Phillies and Mets and Red Sox start their first 2 weeks on the road either. That's not fair
right.
to put them in, you know, Los Angeles and Miami. I understand that, but there's just no way around this.
We have Boston, Yankees, Washington, Philly. Any other northeastern teams that are home? That looks like the only ones on my
list.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a messy weekend. So they're not going to ever cancel because of cold, but it's supposed to snow. Be careful out there driving and whatever else you do. Thank you so much for listening to our show. We have a good time. We like it. It's 2 days a week. It's the best we can do. We'll be back on Monday morning. So for the entire gang, I am Eric. Have an awesome weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.